is VOA News via remote. I'm Tommy McNeil. People across Britain pause for a minute of silence in memory of the only monarch most have ever known. AP correspondent Karen Shamas reports.
The hands at Big Ben marked 8 p.m. without playing its usual bell. Mourners outside Buckingham Palace stood in silence with their heads bowed to show respect to the late Queen. As the minute ended, the crowd erupted into respectful applause. Inside Westminster Hall, where the Queen's coffin lay in state, the usual stream of mourners stopped moving to observe the minute in deep silence. A King's Guard banged his sword on the ground to mark the end. The minute of reflection comes on the eve of the Queen's state funeral, a historic moment of national mourning that will also see the biggest gathering of world leaders for years. Karen Shamas, London.
Ukrainian President Volodymyr Zelensky promised his country there would be no let-up in the counteroffensive that has reclaimed towns and cities from Russia's troops as shelling continued Sunday across a wide stretch of Ukraine. Zelensky ran through a list of towns that Ukraine had taken back in its lightning push across the northeast. Ukraine's military command said its forces secured the eastern bank of Askil River on Saturday. The river, which flows south from Russia into Ukraine, had been a natural break in the newly emerged front line since Kyiv's counteroffensive began. U.S. President Joe Biden paid his respects to at Queen Elizabeth's coffin as thousands of police, hundreds of British troops, and an army of officials made final preparations for the Queen's state funeral. The funeral on Monday at Westminster Abbey will be a spectacular display of national mourning that will also be the biggest gathering of world leaders for years. People across Britain paused for the minute of silence at 8 p.m. to honor the Queen. Also late Sunday, authorities closed a miles-long queue for people to see the Queen lying in state. This is VOA News. World leaders are gathering at the United Nations this week under the shadow of Europe's first major conflict since World War II. Russia's invasion of Ukraine and the fighting it produced has sparked a global food crisis and a division among major powers not seen since the Cold War at a time of increasing international turbulence. The many facets of the war in Ukraine are expected to dominate the annual General Assembly meeting. It is taking place as many countries across the globe are also confronting inequality, an escalating climate crisis, the threat of multiple famines, and increasing misinformation and hate speech. Hurricane Fiona struck Puerto Rico's southwest coast on Sunday. VOA's Diane Roberts explains.
Fiona unleashed landslides, knocked out the power grid, and ripped up asphalt from roads and flung around the pieces. Forecasters said the storm would cause massive flooding and threatened to dump historic levels of rain, with up to 30 inches possible in eastern and southern Puerto Rico. Fiona hit just 2 days before the five-year anniversary of Hurricane Maria, a devastating storm that caused nearly 3,000 deaths. Fiona also washed away a bridge in the central mountain town of Utuado that police say was installed by the National Guard after Hurricane Maria hit in 2017. Diane Roberts, VOA News.
U.S. President Joe Biden says the discovery of a top-secret document or documents at the former U.S. President Donald Trump's Mar-a-Lago estate raised concerns that sensitive data was compromised and calls it irresponsible. In an interview with CBS's 60 Minutes, it aired Sunday. Biden says he has not asked for any specifics because he doesn't want to get himself in the middle of whether or not the Justice Department should move or not move on certain actions they could take. The FBI served a court-authorized search warrant on Trump's Florida home on August 8th. Agents took about 11,000 documents, including roughly 100 with classification markings found in a storage room and an office. On Monday, the world's first public database of fossil fuel production reserves and emission launches, called the Global Registry of Fossil Fuels. It was developed by the group's Carbon Tracker and the Global Energy Monitor and contains data on over 50,000 oil, gas, and coal fields in 89 countries, covering 75% of global production. It shows that the United States and Russia have enough fossil fuel reserves to exhaust the world's remaining carbon budget to stay under 1.5 degrees Celsius warming. And it also shows that if burned, the world's reserves would generate 3.5 trillion tons of greenhouse gas emissions, which is more than all that's been produced since the Industrial Revolution. Via remote, I'm Tommy McNeil, VOA News.
Thank you. Today is Monday, September 19th, and this is VOA's International Edition. I am Chinedofo in Washington. Coming up in the next half hour, Ukrainian officials exhume more bodies and find prisons allegedly used by Russian forces as torture chambers.
President Vladimir Zelensky says more than 10 torture chambers have been found in liberated areas in the Kharkiv region. He says the Russians left behind the devices they used, including electrical wires.
U.S. President Joe Biden to highlight efforts to strengthen global food security at the U.N. General Assembly.
Some 828 million people go to bed hungry every night, according to the World Food Program, making global food security a priority for leaders gathering at the UN General Assembly beginning Tuesday.
And thousands of British troops and officials make final preparations for Queen Elizabeth II's state funeral. We'll have these stories and more next on International Edition. Stay tuned. Ukrainian officials say they exhumed more bodies on Sunday from a forest grave site in eastern Ukraine. This as 440 bodies were recovered in the woodlands near Izyum. President Vladimir Zelensky said in the video address that authorities also found a mass grave containing the bodies of 17 soldiers, some of which he said bore signs of torture by Russian forces. Residents have been searching for dead relatives at the site where emergency workers began exhuming bodies last week. The causes of death of those at the grave site have not been known. It has been established, and though residents say some died in an airstrike. The Kremlin has not commented on the discovery of the graves, but in the past, Moscow has repeatedly denied deliberately attacking civilians or committing atrocities. In territories reclaimed from Russian forces last week, Ukrainian officials are finding makeshift prisons. Allegedly, they served as torture chambers. Associated Press correspondent Ben Thomas reports.
A dank basement behind the local supermarket in Kozacha Lopan. This National Guard commander, asked to be identified just as Vitaly for security reasons, tells an AP team prisoners of war were held here and interrogated. President Vladimir Zelensky says more than 10 torture chambers have been found in liberated areas in the Kharkiv region. He says the Russians left behind the devices they used, including electrical wires. Burial sites are being excavated, most notably in the city of Izium, where Ukrainian officials say more than 440 graves have been found, some bodies showing signs of violent deaths. Zelensky vows to identify all who carried it out. I'm Ben Thomas.
The former executive director of Human Rights Watch is calling on the new UN High Commissioner for Human Rights to make accountability of crimes committed by China in Xinjiang and Russia and Ukraine his top priority. Lisa Schlein reports for VOA from Geneva.
Former Human Rights Watch Executive Director Kenneth Roth Friday called China the biggest task facing new UN Rights Chief Volker Türk. He said Türk will have to deal with the fallout from the Xinjiang report issued by Michelle Bachelet minutes before leaving her post as High Commissioner. He told a press conference the report sets forth a devastating picture of the persecutions facing more than a million Uyghurs and other minority Muslims incarcerated in so-called vocational centers. He said the situation cries out for action by the UN Human Rights Council.
And as you all know, the UN Human Rights Council has never criticized China. This is, you know, a huge gap in the universality of the principles that it claims to uphold. And it should not close its eyes to what now is a matter of, you know, an official UN report, is this horrible situation of possible crimes against humanity in Xinjiang.
Roth said council members should press for a resolution condemning China's action in Xinjiang and ensuring accountability for the crimes committed. He acknowledged this would not be easy, but said it is a winnable battle. He said the council should also press for a special rapporteur on Russia's domestic repression of its people, which he said is making possible the war crimes committed by Russian troops in Ukraine.
I think the two, you know, activities on both sides of the border have to be understood in tandem. That, you know, Putin is doing everything he can to suppress anti-war sentiment within Russia by mounting the most intense repression since Soviet days.
He said appointing a special rapporteur to investigate repression within Russia will enable the council to address war crimes committed by Russian President Vladimir Putin's forces in Ukraine. Roth recognized it will be difficult for Turk to take on the two powerful nations, but said it is doable. He said there is broad European Union support for action against Russia, and that support among council members also is growing to confront China's human rights record. He said it is hard to think of a more important task before the council than finally showing that China is no longer an exception to the application of basic human rights rules. Lisa Schlein for VOA News, Geneva.
Arab media is reporting that an Israeli airstrike at a weapons depot in the vicinity of the Damascus airport has left at least five Syrian government soldiers and two pro-Iranian militia fighters dead. The attack is reportedly the 25th by Israel on targets inside Syria this year. Edward Uranian reports for VOA from Cairo.
Syrian TV reported that government anti-air defense missiles responded to the Israeli airstrikes that took place early Saturday morning in the region of Damascus Airport. It was the latest Israeli attack on Syrian territory since Israeli missiles hit targets at Aleppo Airport on September 6. Rami Abdulrahman of the Britain-based opposition Syrian Observatory for Human Rights told Arab media that five government soldiers and two pro-Iranian militia fighters were killed in the Israeli airstrikes overnight. He notes it was not clear if the Israeli attack was inside or outside the direct perimeter of Damascus Airport, but says the explosion of a weapons depot that was targeted could be heard not far from an area controlled by Lebanese Hezbollah militia fighters. Israeli media indicated the attack was the 25th by Israeli forces on Syrian territory so far this year. Saudi-owned Al Arabiya TV reported that pro-Iranian militia forces withdrew recently from their positions near Deir Zor in the east of Syria over fears of security lapses. In addition to the strike on pro-Iranian militia forces near Damascus Airport, Israeli attacks included positions near the Damascus suburbs of Sayyida Zainab, Al-Qaswa, and an area called Rasula Farms. Lebanon's Hezbollah militia is reported to store rockets and drones in the area. Syrian analyst Bassem Talib told government TV that several foreign governments, including Turkey, Israel, and the U.S., are continuing aggressive policies inside Syrian territory in the north and east of the country, asserting the ongoing conflict in Syria serves Israeli interests. Edward Uranian for VOA News, Cairo.
President Joe Biden will address the U.N. General Assembly in New York Wednesday, where he's expected to highlight U.S. efforts to strengthen global food security and replenish the global fund to fight AIDS and other pandemics. White House Bureau Chief Patsy Widaskuwara has this report.
Some 828 million people go to bed hungry every night, according to the World Food Program, making global food security a priority for leaders gathering at the U.N. General Assembly beginning Tuesday. President Joe Biden will address the Assembly on Wednesday. National Security Council Coordinator for Strategic Communications John Kirby told VOA.
He'll have a chance to address the whole General Assembly in the morning. He'll be dealing with issues of food security around the globe, food security which is exacerbated by the war in Ukraine.
Biden will seek to balance U.S. and European allies' interest of supporting Ukraine and isolating Russia with the myriad problems faced by the rest of the world. Richard Gowan, U.N. Director at the International Crisis Group via Skype.
Early in the war, European diplomats in particular demanded that their African and Asian counterparts should support Ukraine at the UN. But they didn't really show that they were listening to their counterparts' concerns about food security and the economic shocks linked to this war. Now the US and the Europeans are really trying to send the message that they are sympathetic to the developing world's economic concerns and that they will work to address those concerns.
To that end, U.S. Secretary of State Antony Blinken will co-host a food security summit on the sidelines of the UN General Assembly Tuesday. Since Russia's invasion of Ukraine, exports of food and fertilizer from the region have been disrupted. This pushed post-pandemic food prices even higher and the world further from achieving the UN goal of zero hunger by 2030. Rob Vos of the International Food Policy Research Institute via Skype.
We need to invest a lot more in agriculture and food systems, or particularly change things around in food systems such that they become more inclusive, so the poor people can reap more benefits from it, that food prices stay low so that they're accessible, and that production becomes more resilient and sustainable.
Global health is another priority for the administration.
Because, as COVID-19 reminded us, global health threats do not respect borders. We must tackle COVID-19, monkeypox, and other outbreaks, and we must do it together.
Also Wednesday, Biden will host a conference on the Global Fund to Fight AIDS, Tuberculosis, and Malaria. The U.S. has given $2 billion out of the $6 billion committed to meet the $18 billion needed globally. Patsy Udakuswara, VOA News, Washington.
Officials and aid workers in Somalia's drought-stricken south say the area is expecting many deaths from farming if aid is not quickly scaled up. A doctor tells VOA that one child is dying per day at his hospital due to malnutrition. Mohamed Desane traveled to the area thought likely to experience famine and sent this report from Wajid, Somalia.
Somalia's southwest state is one of the places the United Nations expects famine to arise as the prolonged and worst drought in 40 years continues to devastate the country. State humanitarian advice and disaster management minister Nasir Arush told VOA in an interview after he visited hard-hit areas, including Wajid in Bokol region, that the situation is very, very bad.
You know, we have been dealing with this drought for the last 3 years, but the situation is getting really, really bad. The latest report show 214,130 people in Southwest are in a catastrophe situation, which is called IBC-5. That number was 112,470 in June 4. So from June 4 to September 12, we have new 101,660 people increase.
He said the urgent situation needs an urgent response. Dr. Saeed Yusuf Mohammed works at the Stabilization Center, a unit inside the biggest hospital in Southwest State. He tells VOA that the drought is having a devastating toll on children. He said that every day a child is dying due to malnutrition at his stabilization center. He says you can see that the number of patients who need treatment for malnutrition is increasing, and there are times when the hospital reaches beyond its capacity. And now it is possible to admit over 90 patients a week, and sometimes more than 20 a day. Mohamed Daisane for VOA News, Wajid, Somalia.
In other news, U.S. President Joe Biden paid his respects at Queen Elizabeth II's coffin as thousands of police, hundreds of British troops, and an army of officials made final preparations for the Queen's state funeral. The funeral Monday at Westminster Abbey will be a spectacular display of national mourning. That will also be the biggest gathering of world leaders for years. The president made the sign of the cross and put his hands to his heart as he stood quietly near the casket in the 900-year-old Westminster Hall. People across Britain paused for a minute of silence at 8 p.m. to honor the Queen. King Charles III, meanwhile, held a reception for heads of state and other leaders Sunday evening at Buckingham Palace. You're listening to VOA's International Edition. I am Chinedu Afo in Washington. As temperatures reach record highs worldwide, air conditioning is becoming more of a necessity. From Smokesville, Massachusetts, Mark Dable has this story of a company hoping to make AC units more efficient.
In an overheating world, air conditioning is becoming a necessity for many. It is also part of the problem, however. TransEra, a startup with roots at the Massachusetts Institute of Technology, is designing a highly efficient air conditioner using a powder with extraordinary properties. It's a new class of synthetic nanoparticles called metal organic frameworks, or MOFs, that Mircea Dinca researches in his lab at MIT.
So what these are really are combinations of various metals and organic molecules that together make a structure such that it literally looks like a sponge.
The idea is to use MOFs to absorb moisture from the humid air entering the air conditioner. The resulting dry air takes far less energy to cool, says TransAero CEO Sorin Grama.
So this is our air conditioner test chamber, and we measure the energy consumption, temperature, humidity. In the TransAero design, these air conditioners would be coated with the MOF material. We can achieve at least 35% energy efficiency, and in cases, some cases, 50% more.
That's Mark Debo reporting. Researchers develop a pill form of insulin is showing promise at the University of British Columbia in Western Canada. As Craig McCullough reports, the goal is to eliminate the need for diabetics to inject themselves with a life-saving medication.
According to the World Health Organization, there are an estimated 422 million diabetics worldwide. The disease claims 1.5 million lives each year. The U.S. Centers for Disease Control and Prevention estimates 30 million Americans have diabetes. Although widely available in the developed world, current forms of insulin require refrigeration, which can be a stumbling block in developing nations. An oral version of insulin in the form of an everyday pill could change everything, making it easier and cheaper to transport and distribute, even to remote regions of the planet. Researchers at the University of British Columbia in Vancouver think they may have discovered a formula for a pill that effectively delivers a full dose of insulin to a patient's liver, where it is needed to regulate blood sugar levels, without dissipating uselessly in the stomach. The trick is to not swallow the pill, according to Anubhav Pratap Singh, an assistant professor at the school's Faculty of Land and Food Systems and the project's lead researcher. He says the pill can be absorbed in the mouth by wedging it between the cheek and gums. In laboratory studies on rats, full doses of insulin reached the liver, he said.
So we are getting quite a high amount of yield, and so we hope that this will be a more economical.
Pratap Singh started studying oral insulin in 2018, inspired to help his diabetic father, who has to inject insulin multiple times a day. He says a pill form would increase the quality of life for millions of patients who use insulin around the world.
Improve the quality of life tremendously. Instead of having to take insulin, having to travel with it in refrigerated boxes, one will simply have a normal capsule or a tablet in a normal wrapper, which will be shelf stable.
That's Craig McCullough reporting.
Every year, world leaders gather in New York for the annual United Nations General Assembly. Count on VOA to be there, delivering news you can trust on radio, TV, and the web. A free press is essential. VOA Africa, your trusted source for news and information.
This is Science in a Minute.
Saturn, according to recent estimates, is about 4.503 billion years old, but its famous rings are only about 100 million years old. Scientists have been trying to find out why those rings are so much younger than the planet itself. A new study published in the journal Science and led by researchers at the Massachusetts Institute of Technology suggests that at one time, Saturn had at least one extra moon along with its current stable of 83 moons. Dubbed Chrysalis by the authors, the study proposes that the moon was ripped apart when it grazed its host planet about 160 million years ago. The researchers' findings suggest that it then broke into fragments that may have continued to float in orbit. It's thought that those fragments broke into even smaller icy bits over the years and formed Saturn's iconic rings. I'm VOA's Rick Pantaleo.
Border Crossings.
Join host Larry London.
Larry London.
On Border Crossings, VOA's only worldwide music request hour. Whoa. Every weekday at 1500 Universal. Tune in for the biggest hits and amazing artists. win prizes, and get the latest news from exclusive celebrity interviews. Ooh. Send your requests to Facebook at VOA Larry London, Twitter at Border Crossings, or Instagram at Border Crossings VOA. Or call 202-619-2077 and have your favorite music played to the entire world. Ah. Don't miss Border Crossings every weekday at 1500 Universal, only on The Voice of America.
Go beyond the daily headlines with VOA's Flashpoint Ukraine. Each weekday, join us as we put the latest developments into a global context with stories, interviews, and analysis. Listen online at voanews.com/flashpoint or in your favorite podcast player.
This has been International Edition on The Voice of America. On behalf of the entire production team, thank you so much for listening. Visit our website for in-depth coverage of world events and news 24 hours a day at voanews.com. And check out voaafrica.com for more English language programming. You can find International Edition and our current affairs programming counter, Press Conference USA, and issues in the news at voanews.com. Until next time, I am Chinedofo in Washington. Have a wonderful day.
Next, an editorial reflecting the views of the United States government.
The United States is determined to prevent the Iranian regime from acquiring a nuclear weapon. President Joe Biden has repeatedly made that clear. He has also made clear he believes the best way to achieve that goal is through diplomacy. Since April 2021, the United States has engaged in indirect negotiations with Iran with the aim of a mutual return to full implementation of the Iran nuclear deal, the JCPOA. The United States exited the deal under then-President Donald Trump in 2018, and since then, Iran's breakout time to produce enough material for a nuclear weapon, should it choose to do so, has been dramatically reduced from about a year prior to the U.S. exit from the deal to a matter of weeks or less today. In an interview on Al Arabiya, U.S. National Security Council Coordinator for Strategic Communication John Kirby emphasized that regardless of whether a mutual return to full implementation of the JCPOA is ultimately achieved, the United States is fully prepared to counter Iran's destabilizing activities in the region, which have continued to escalate since the U.S. left the JCPOA in 2018. With or without a nuclear deal, we're going to defend our national security interests, said NSC Coordinator Kirby. We can do that economically with sanctions that still stay in place, and we can do that militarily in terms of defending our people and our facilities. The United States would prefer not to take such steps, said Mr. Kirby. Iran has some decisions it has to make, not just with respect to the nuclear deal on the table, but what kind of future they want to see for themselves going forward in the region. Mr. Kirby noted that Iran's leaders are the ones supporting terrorist networks. They are the ones threatening maritime traffic. They are the ones contributing to destabilization on the political forefront inside the Middle East. And they can make some decisions on their own to stop doing those kinds of things. And they would not face the kind of pressure they're going to get from the United States and other countries, economically and militarily.
That was an editorial reflecting the views of the United States government.